The hour of recess having expired, the Senate is now in session. Senator from Cole.
Thank you, Mr. President. Without exception, the Senate, with no objection, I should say, the Senate will go to the order of business of Senate bills for perfection informal calendar. I'd ask you to recognize Senator from Barton on Senate Bill 847.
Senator from Barton, you are recognized for Senate Bill 847 from the informal calendar.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Hold it. Senator from the 7th, for what purpose do you rise?
Speak a moment of personal privilege.
You will have your point of personal privilege.
Thank you, Mr. President. Today, my family laid to rest. My wife's grandmother, my children's great-grandmother, Ruby Dehoff, lived 93 years on this earth. She saw many things. I hope that we are all so lucky to have a similar run. I just ask for one brief moment of silence to honor her memory.
All members stand. We will have a moment of silence. Thank you for your time and consideration. Senator from Barton, you are now recognized for Senate Bill 847 from the informal calendar.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that Senate Bill 847 be taken up off the informal calendar and brought before the body for perfection.
You've heard the motion from the Senator from Barton. All those in favor say aye. Any opposition, no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The bill is before the body. Senator from Barton.
President, I think we had an inquiry going on at the time that we laid this bill over.
Senator from the 1st, I believe you had the 4th at the time the bill was laid over.
And going back to the senator, rather than going back to the senator from 26th of Franklin County, of whom I believe I was inquiring at the time the bill was laid over, I will instead go to the senator from the 5th, who apparently wishes to visit with the sponsor. So if you don't mind, Mr. President, I will go to the senator from the 24th.
Senator from the 24th, do you yield?
I do.
Proceed.
Good evening, Senator.
Senator, I note that we have, I believe, an amendment pending and an amendment to the amendment pending, both offered by the senator from the 5th. So I want to take just a few minutes to reset where we were when we broke this off. I looked in her direction as she was walking into the chamber, and I think she indicated that she wanted to have another conversation or two before coming out here, so I did not want to go right back to her. So I appreciate you're gladly taking my inquiry.
Yes.
So I'm actually looking through my file.
I am doing the same.
I am not certain of in front of me a copy. I should, but I'm not sure that I do have a copy of the pending amendment or the amendment thereto offered by the senator from the 5th. I note that we had a Senate substitute that was circulated the day that this bill first came to the floor. So I'm certain I have that somewhere as well. But I do not appear to have either the pending amendment or the amendment to the amendment in my possession, which is odd. So I will look in the direction of the table and suggest.
I don't have those either, Senator, so I can't even brief you. I'm not sure why that would be.
Well, things happen. Why don't we take just a minute so that our friends at the table might be able to get us the pending relevant amendment and amendment to the amendment. But we're here on the collateral source bill, Senate Bill 847, and I'm still actually shuffling through my file for the substitute and seem to have it. Actually, I'm not sure I have the substitute either. Very strange. So I've got the amendment now, and the amendment goes to page 3, line 11, and inserts a new sub 6, stating that notwithstanding any statutory provision to the contrary, if the plaintiff or his or her employer or other representative has paid premiums or other payments to an insurer or authorized representative for the purpose of having such insurer or authorized representative pay all or any part of the plaintiff's special damages, the plaintiff may introduce evidence of the present value of all such premiums or other payments and may recover such amount as part of his or her special damages. And then the item currently before us is Amendment 1 to Amendment 1, which adds at the end of that paragraph, in addition to all other damages. So this amendment basically says if the plaintiff or the employer has paid premiums to an insurer, the plaintiff may introduce evidence of the present value of the premium. So this was this. Thank you. So it comes back to me now, Senator. This was an effort. If we're going to use bills as opposed to value as the determinant of recovery, then insurance premiums paid ought to be recoverable as well. And I'll tell you, I expressed some concern with that approach. I understand. I agree with the philosophy motivating it, and I think one of the themes throughout this debate is going to be and should be what's good for the goose is good for the gander. We want a level playing field. Some would say that the playing field we have right now is tilted against employers and businesses. And you know what? I understand that point of view. Others would say that the Senate substitute in front of us now is tilted against employees and accident victims. And again, some may agree, some may disagree. But the point is, hopefully we can all agree that in our civil justice system, what we ought to have is a level playing field. Do you agree with that, Senator?
Absolutely.
And reasonable minds may differ on what that is or what that means, but hopefully that's something that you've got 32 votes for in the Missouri Senate, even if you might not have 32 like minds of what that needs to look like. So my concern with the approach of allowing recovery of premiums paid, and don't get me wrong, I think it's motivated by a spirit of fairness,
right?
Because those premiums theoretically would have been used to administer care. The problem is that's not all that they would have been used for. If you're somebody who, well, the first problem with it is, of course, is it's not going to pertain in a lot of cases. A lot of folks don't have insurance. For those that do, in most cases, I think it's fair to say that folks are going to have had other health care provided through that insurance policy besides the health care that they receive for the occurrence that gives rise to the claim. Wouldn't you agree, Senator?
I would think so.
So the problem is this. It's already, I mean, Mr. President, I hate to be this way, but I'm really having trouble. Could we get a little...
Can we have quiet in the chamber to allow the senators to have their debate? Thank you.
I really hate to be difficult about that, Mr. President. Thank you. But it was getting to the point where it was getting very hard to hear. Or... for that matter, concentrate. So it's already a public policy concern that we want the evidence before the jury to be evidence that, one, bears on the dispute in question, and two, that is reasonable and fair to put to a jury.
Right.
And that's part of the reason why, I mean, it is a rule of evidence that unfairly prejudicial evidence is excluded, whether it's the fact that the defendant happens to have $1 million in insurance,
right,
or the fact that, you know, the plaintiff did something terrible 20 years ago that's on their record. And there some of those terrible things can be admitted into evidence under certain circumstances, but a whole lot of those sorts of things can't be. So we're careful. I mean, the reason we have rules of evidence is to exclude evidence that, for one reason or another, we don't want the jury to see. And as Missouri operates currently, we don't introduce evidence of the defendant's insurance. We don't introduce evidence of the plaintiff's health insurance. For two reasons. One, it's not really directly getting at the merits of the dispute. And two, it can cause confusion. And so... if you've got a plaintiff who's been injured, their health insurance company has provided care, but has also provided care for a completely unrelated condition. If I'm a careful defense lawyer, what I'm going to argue is, well, this person has paid $50,000 in health insurance premiums in the last, say, you know, 5+ years, however long
right.
It's been. And you know, we could argue allocation. It's a term of art, and there are times in the insurance coverage litigation context where we actually do argue allocation issues like this, but you can argue, okay, this incident we think comprises 20% of the health care they've received under this policy, and other unrelated health insurance or health care that they've received under their insurance has been 80%. So while they paid $50,000 in premiums, only $10,000 of it should be fair game. But the problem with that is it's needlessly complicated. It's going to increase the scope of issues in dispute. And you're going to have the jury either hearing about or wondering or knowing what else this person has had by way of health care that may be relevant to the dispute, but is more likely than not to be totally irrelevant to the dispute, and maybe unfairly prejudicial to one side or the other. I mean, if I'm a defendant and the plaintiff happens to have a medical condition that is terribly sympathetic, you can't help but have tremendous sympathy for this person, but it has absolutely nothing to do, and the plaintiff isn't even claiming that it has anything to do with the injuries that they suffered for the occurrence that we're here in trial on. It's unfair. It's unfairly prejudicial to the defendant for the jury to hear that this person has this other terrible hard luck circumstance. On the other hand, if it's the sort of thing that might be embarrassing to the plaintiff, or just something that is just totally irrelevant, we don't want a jury hearing that. And the problem with the amendment, and I understand the fair is fair rationale behind it. I agree with the fair is fair rationale behind it. It just forces us to get into a whole bunch of other stuff that has nothing to do with the dispute. And this bill already mucks up the fact-finding process for a jury, in my view, in a lot of these civil cases. My concern with the amendment is I think it takes it that much further. What do you think, Senator?
Well, I agree with you. And who on my copy of the amendment, I don't have the sponsor. I have
Senator from the 5th.
Okay. She offered the amendment and the amendment to the amendment. Okay,
yeah.
Right. And, you know, again, I think the intention here is clear. I understand it. If you are going to provide evidence that the plaintiff is not going to, at the end of the day, be personally responsible for the bills, then you want to show that the reason that person isn't personally responsible is because that person has been paying in for insurance year after year, so that should an occasion like this arise, she has some help to pay for whatever medical bills she might incur. So I understand the intent of it, but I agree with you. I don't know how you figure out a way to measure out which portion of those payments should go for this, and I do think it needlessly complicates a situation that says, look, let's be straightforward about what happened. Here is the plaintiff, the victim in this case. Here is the defendant. Here is what happened. This is what those injuries are worth. And why it's important that we establish the correct number there is because those injuries, in addition to the medical bills that need to be paid or whatever other direct expenses there are, we may decide that the actions of the defendant were so egregious that there should be some kind of punitive damages. And generally, even though it's not in the law, but generally those are a multiple of the underlying initial damages. So we've got to get this right. And whether this amendment does that or not, I think it may not. But again, I think the intention is if you're going to mess with one side, you got to mess with the other side and make sure that we're balancing things out. So,
well, yeah, you have presaged where this debate might head when and if we get off this amendment. I think that's the direction that this conversation needs to go in. And Senator, in that regard, I will say that it will be that it is my objective to try to make this process be as constructive as possible. At the same time, we are in a chamber where unilateralism is seldom rewarded. And in that regard, I think it is incumbent upon me to do my best job to try to address the concerns that I have with the legislation in the context of achieving perfection, as it were.
Right.
But at the same time, I cannot do that unilaterally. Yeah, I can't make anybody take yes for an answer, I don't know that there's a meeting of the minds to be had here. At the same time, I think it is incumbent upon me to try to find out. So, I do see the senator from the 5th has joined us now. I just wanted to take the first moments of this discussion this evening to sort of reset where we were procedurally and to discuss the pros and cons of the amendments that are now before the body. Thank you, Senator.
Thank you.
Mr. President, may I inquire the senator from the 5th?
Senator from the 5th, do you yield?
I do.
Proceed.
Senator, how are you this evening?
I'm good. Senator, how are you? Very busy day today.
What's that?
I said it was a very busy day today here.
Yeah. Yeah, I myself was in committee prior afternoon. Two different committees had a number of bills hurt in judiciary and a very good discussion. One bill and a very good substantive discussion in commerce. But I don't think you and I served together on either of those committees. So you must have been attending to other matters.
Yes, I was in judiciary. You were there.
You had a bill in judiciary. That's right. Yes.
Yeah, I had the. What did I have in there?
And I think I actually may have had to step out while
you... Yeah, I forgot what my last hearing was about. It had come to me, you know.
Yeah.
I'm having a senior moment too early. This is way
Senator,
too early for me to be having a senior moment.
Senator, I know what you mean and regrettably can relate all too well. You know, I don't think I heard...
I'm sorry, the shackling bill.
Oh, yes, yes. And Senator, I apologize. I saw only the very end of your presentation. I had... believe it or not, three separate groups of constituents that came through during that time. They had a lunch, and that's why they weren't here in the morning. They had a lunch, and so they were just happened to be that they were in the building between 1:30 and 3, and they all came at once, which was, from a certain point of view, great that I was only at one time, but unfortunately it kept me away from the hearing on your bill. But
Well, hopefully I can get your support on that particular piece of legislation. It's a very serious piece of legislation that we need to pass here in the state of Missouri when it comes to shackling juvenile when they're entering the courts, as well as pregnant women.
Yeah, no, I...
We had some very horror stories about women shackled with their hands and their... and her feet, and then some black box on their stomach while they were pregnant, and they would have to go in. Many of them would, go into labor and have to still be shackled.
Good heavens.
And they were low risk, and so we talk a lot about that, and hopefully we can get that bill passed. We had a lot of support. We had support coming from the pro-lifers and pro-choice organizations. We was just all one big happy family there wanting to get this bill done.
Well, I regret that I wasn't able to hear all of the testimony on that bill, Senator. But I had two dozen plus constituents in four different groups stop by during that time. And as much as I try to attend every minute of every hearing, when somebody is kind enough to make the round trip 4 hours to join us here, I do try to at least visit with them to the extent that I'm able. And
so you know that we are on the amendment to the amendment, right?
That's right.
And basically, my amendment limits the allowing collateral source evidence to be admissible to only medical malpractice cases. And I think that we're going in the right direction here.
Well,
okay, because we're basically not narrowing the scope, but we're just kind of honing in on, what can be allowed when it comes to collateral source evidence and what's admissible. But my question to you, though, is,
sure.
Is this here? Can you give me, because I'm not sure, can you give me, medical malpractice, cases, what would be considered medical malpractice cases? Lawsuits. I mean, when a person, when something falls on their head while they're working, give me a couple of cases situations where you can file a suit.
I'll give you one that happened to my next-door neighbor's brother. My next-door neighbor's brother, not my current next-door neighbor, a former next-door neighbor of mine, her brother had one kidney that was about 75% diseased, 25% functional, and another kidney that was fully functional. And the course of treatment that was decided upon was that he was going to have the diseased, the 75% diseased kidney removed. And he went to a hospital, had the surgery done, and tragically had his fully functional kidney removed and was left with one kidney, 25% functional. And that happened maybe 8 years ago, and I think he's been dead for five, maybe longer. And I believe, I don't know, I have been told, I'm of the understanding that there was a very significant settlement that was reached, which is understandable. I don't know that any healthcare provider would actually choose to try that case, and, especially given that it's a relatively clear case of liability. About as clear a case of liability as you're going to get, and the impact on life expectancy when you go from one kidney, one and a quarter kidneys to one quarter of a kidney is pretty plain. You know, obviously it was a situation where there was a very substantial settlement, but that was of no help, or I mean, not of no help. The money, I mean, you can't quantify. If you asked any person to say, how much would you have to be paid to choose between having one functioning kidney and barely any functioning kidney, I don't know that anybody could put a number on that. But we had that debate last year, Senator, when we did something that I really like it when we do. And that is, we took a disputed issue with a whole lot of people on both sides of it, all of whom had reasonable concerns about the issue. And when at first in 2013 we tried to get consensus on what our state's policy ought to be on non-economic damages and medical malpractice cases, we had a late night, or maybe two, but I think it was right around midnight, and that bill got laid over, and we were right back on it the next year. And that second version reflected, I think, some movement on the part of everybody, but there was still fundamental disagreement that we were not capable of crossing the divide on. And no bill got perfected in 2014. Last year, Senator, that bill came to the floor with a coalition of everybody, not everybody, 90% of the people that were concerned with what our state's economic damages, non-economic damages for medical malpractice cases should be, were in agreement when that bill hit the floor that that's what we ought to perfect and pass into law. It didn't go far enough for some, it went too far for others, but there was a fundamental understanding that, you know what, we can all live with these rules of the road. It's not a great deal for either side, but it is a fair deal for all sides. And there were some dissenters, and we had the unusual scenario where folks who are almost invariably on the opposite side of that issue working together arm in arm to gang tackle the folks who were still trying to hold it up. And instead of an all-night filibuster or an all-morning filibuster, that bill got perfected in about 90 minutes, and it only took 90 minutes because there was still some resistance to be overcome.
You know, Senator, I
that bill's now law.
I have a question.
Sure.
I mean, and I have a lot of questions. You know, I still consider you the expert. You're my expert witness.
You're very kind.
Now, you know, the amendment to the amendment was an approach that I decided to take This amendment is similar to the Arizona's language, okay? And Arizona, isn't it true to say that Arizona legislators are controlled by Republicans?
I believe that's the case. My mother happens to reside in Arizona. And one unique thing about the state of Arizona was that at one time, I think it became the first state in the nation to have all of its statewide office holders, not its federal Senate delegation, but all of its statewide office holders happened to be women. That happened in Arizona. I think it was a bipartisan group. I could be wrong. It could have been all Republicans. But yeah, I believe there's a Republican majority in Arizona.
It's a Republican majority. Is that true to say?
I believe that's correct.
I wonder if Blake can find that out for me. If it's a Republicans, are they controlling the overall?
I see a nod coming from the table. I think your fact checker has backed you up on that.
How is it that, you know, the Republicans in Arizona, they understand and they're getting it right, but the Republicans here in the state of Missouri, which is a show-me state, which sometimes can be seen as a backward state, why is it that they have a very difficult time supporting this particular amendment when you have Republicans in Arizona who's controlling the House and the Senate? They understand the importance of an amendment such as this one.
Well, Senator, respectfully, and I don't want to be partisan about this issue because I truly believe how our courts handle civil cases is and should be a nonpartisan issue. I think there are people on both sides of these issues, on both sides of the aisle, and so I really don't want to taint one party or the other with a partisan brush on this.
Well, you're going to have a majority of Republicans supporting this, so you can't take this as a partisan issue.
Not to put too fine a point on it, Senator, but in their defense, it's not as if we've had a vote on this because the issue keeps getting debated at great length. I suspect you're probably correct. In point of fact, there's not been a vote on that on this issue in this chamber, and I understand to a certain extent the frustration of those who want it. That said, we are talking about your amendment that allows for recovery of health insurance premiums, correct?
Yeah, the medical malpractice, where, you know, it limits the allowing collateral source evidence to be admissible to only medical malpractice cases.
Senator, I'm not sure that's my understanding of the amendment on the floor. I've got point zero.
We have two amendments on the floor.
Well, there's an amendment to the amendment. There's point 01S, which is the amendment, and point 01F, which is the amendment to the amendment, correct? I think that's what I show. That said, it wasn't in my folder when I got out here, so for all I know, it could be that I was handed the wrong amendments by the...
Which amendment are you looking at now?
Senate Amendment 1 to Senate Amendment 1, which is 559402.01F, and I see a nod from the table, and that simply adds the words, in addition to all other damages at the end of the paragraph, on the underlying amendment, which is 559401.01S, which has a new sub 6 that basically says that if the plaintiff, the employer, has paid health insurance premiums, that the plaintiff may introduce evidence of the present value of all such premiums or other payments and may recover such amount as part of his or her special damages. That's the amendment of yours that I believe we're on right now. I don't read that to be specific to medical malpractice cases,
okay.
But it could be that
I'm
missing something.
Yeah, I have too much stuff here.
I understand.
I'm looking at the wrong thing, yes.
Well, and there have been a few different things flying around on this, Senator. I mean, I have three different versions of one amendment that I've drafted and haven't offered, so I know what you mean. Respectfully, in defense of my friends across the aisle, as I expressed to the Senator from the 24th, I have concerns about how this amendment would work in our jury system, simply because, I mean, you'd agree with me that somebody who has health insurance that happens to provide coverage and care in the event of an accident is probably also going to be using that insurance for other things that have nothing to do with the accident that's at the center of the case, wouldn't you think? Yeah.
I'm reading. I'm sorry.
No, I understand. No, yeah. I'll phrase my question somewhat more elaborately, Senator, and in a more time-consuming manner.
I can hardly hear you. Conversation being had over here is kind of...
Yeah, that's...
Senators, if you'll keep your conversations to the minimum so that we can hear debate, that'd be much appreciated. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'm going to just about hold the microphone right up to my jaw here. So I seem to sound louder, don't I, Senator?
Say that again.
Do I sound louder now?
Yeah, you sound much louder.
Yeah, and in fairness, my voice isn't going so hot, which makes you really wonder what's in store. But so it goes. So as I was saying a moment ago, in defense of the proponents of the underlying bill, I have concerns with how this amendment might work in our court system. I agree with the principle, with the fairness of the principle that I think motivates your amendment, Senator, and I strongly agree with you on that. My concern is, if somebody has health insurance that provides health care in the event of an accident, odds are good they probably had that health insurance provide health care for other things that have nothing to do with the accident, that neither the plaintiff nor the defendant may necessarily want into evidence,
No.
And it could potentially confuse a jury. At the very least, it's extraneous information that they don't need to have.
Yeah.
And if I'm a defendant, I'm going to argue, look, if I think that 20% of the premiums were for care that was administered in this case, and 80% for everything else, other care that's unrelated to this accident, that's going to be getting into things that aren't relevant to the dispute. You're probably going to need, you're going to need
so
expert witnesses.
So, witness. Senator, you're not supporting my amendment, is what you're saying?
I have concerns with
the,
it. I like the concept.
Additional all to all other damages?
I like the concept. I'm concerned about how you operationalize that fundamental notion of fairness that I think your amendment is motivated by, Senator, because I want a plaintiff, if they're going to be cut off at the knees on introducing the value of services that they needed, healthcare that they needed in response to the accident that has brought them to court, I want them to be able to recover whatever else they can that has been out of their own pocket. If all we're allowing is out of pocket without regard to the fact that they're insured, and I recognize the sponsor may debate with me the notion of whether the bill actually says that, but I'm concerned that it might. The concern is that, I want them to be able to get back that portion of their health insurance premiums they paid that's gone to the accident. I think that's only fair. The problem is how you get there in a real-world jury trial is, frankly, ugly and expensive, and in most cases going to be more expensive than it's worth. To get an allocation expert to testify is going to cost, in almost all cases, it's a four-figure proposition, and there will be some cases where you're talking about bills where that's a justified expense, but there are going to be a whole lot of cases where proving your case is going to be more expensive than winning it, and I'm not sure that that's fair to anybody.
Okay. All right, so that's your opinion, I can respect the fact that you have concerns about the underlying amendment to the amendment. I don't have a problem with that. You can just vote against it.
Well, and Senator, I'm not saying that I don't think some form of this shouldn't come on. I'm just saying I think we would need some way to operationalize it that wouldn't be prohibitively expensive for everybody involved, most especially the plaintiff, but the defense is going to have to pay to litigate that issue too. And it's going to make the litigation process more expensive for everybody. And it's one thing if you're going to make litigation thousands of dollars more expensive to determine how hundreds of thousands of dollars get awarded. But in a lot of these cases, you're talking about medical bills that are significant, very significant, but it just doesn't make a whole lot of sense to pay an expert to come in and testify for $1,500 on the behalf of the plaintiff, $1,500 on behalf of the defense. If Daubert is law in this state, for each side to spend between more than $5,000 to litigate what expert gets to testify to what, to fight over how you allocate $12,000 in medical bills, there are some cases where if it's handled efficiently, that can make sense, but in a whole lot of cases, it's not going to make any sense at all. And that's my concern with it, Senator. But I agree with the premise of the amendment. I really do.
Okay.
And with that, Senator, I see some others who look like they might want to inquire of you, so I'm going to terminate my inquiry. Thank you, Senator. Thank you, Mr. President.
Senator from the 7th, what purpose do you rise?
To inquire the Senator from the 24th.
Senator from the 24th, do you yield?
I do.
Proceed.
Thank you, Senator. I just got here. I have not been privy to the conversation previously. And then when we took this up couple weeks ago, I was also not engaged in that discussion. So I come at this with fairly fresh eyes and little understanding of exactly what it is that this bill is trying to accomplish in terms of both the problem that it seeks to address and the solution that it is offering. So I'd like to go through the underlying bill. I know we have a couple amendments pending, but before I can determine what the amendments do, I need to understand what the underlying bill does. And I know the Senator from the 1st is probably the foremost expert on legal matters in this chamber. I will happily give him that title. But being lay people that we are, non-attorneys, it helps for our constituents to be able to understand what we're doing if you and I understand what it is we're doing.
Right. And so I appreciate you inquiring me, and we can go through this. And, you know, I will tell you that my concerns about this legislation are that it, at the end of the day, it's going to end up, in my view, unfairly reducing the amount of compensation that's paid to the plaintiff, the victim, by giving the one of the ways is by giving the defendant a credit for the plaintiff's very own insurance policy. And that's what this amendment tries to deal with, and the amendment to the amendment tries to deal with. But let's do what you said and go through the bill. I think that that's just one piece of what I think is wrong with this piece of legislation. So if we can go through the bill and just sort of walk it through. And this is the Senate substitute.
I've got the Senate substitute.
Right.
02.02F?
Yes.
Is that what you're working with?
Yes.
All right. So it looks like 490.715 subsection 1 says no evidence of collateral sources, and then the new language added, or payments rendered under subsection 2 of this section shall be admissible other than such evidence provided for in this section. So that, I'm already confused.
No kidding. Yeah, I missed that that law school class. Oh, yeah, I didn't go to law school. Right.
Nor did I.
But so basically the language that's added, the payments rendered under subsection 2 of this section is what we're going to read next. So that was
okay.
Subsection 1. So
all right.
Go ahead.
So
you're a good
subsection
reader.
2. If prior to trial, a defendant or his or her insurer or authorized representative or any combination of them pays all or part of a plaintiff's special damages, and this is bracketed out now, so we're deleting, the defendant may introduce evidence that some other person other than the plaintiff has paid those amounts. The evidence shall not identify any person having such made such payments.
Right. So let's just talk about that part that was taken out. I think it's important because what it is replaced with matters pretty significantly. So this is saying in current law, the defendant, the person who's defending himself or the corporation defending itself against the fact that, you know, yes, that victim, that plaintiff was injured, but I'm the defendant, and I'm going to show you that some of the costs that plaintiff, that victim, would have had to incur were paid by somebody else. Under current law, they're allowed to show that.
So if I'm in a car accident and I have medical bills in excess of $100,000, and the health insurance company pays $80,000 of that, then under current law, I can show that $80,000 was paid and that was still a damage to me.
Right. Well, you can show that there was a bill for $100,000 and that was what the medical value or I will call it the value, in order to make that person well or as well as possible again after that accident, if we're talking about an accident, the cost to do that was $100,000, and you as the defendant can say, well, yes, the cost is $100,000, I know that, and that victim had $80,000 paid. So that was what the current law, and that is being removed.
Okay, and then the
new
language.
In its place.
then any portion of a plaintiff's claim for special damages that are satisfied by a payment from a defendant or the defendant's insurer or authorized representative or any combination of them are not recoverable from that defendant.
Okay, this is a pretty big deal, and I don't know if you understand it, but here's how your other non-lawyer colleague understands this. So what it's saying now is if that bill was $100,000 and the insurance company put forward $80,000 to pay it, we are saying that originally when we went to the trial, we were able to say the cost to help this person become whole again, this victim, was $100,000. And, oh, by the way, insurance kicked in and paid 80 of it, but it was a $100,000 cost.
The true damage.
The true damage, the actual cost. This says we're not going to be able to recover anything but perhaps that $20,000 from the defendant. And here's why, and we're going to get into this later, and here's why it's so critical. And I may be jumping ahead, but I can't help but look at this bill as a whole. So when the only thing you can recover from damages is that unpaid amount of $20,000, again, those were actual damages. What we know is if this is a terrible accident and could have been, you know, accidents happen, but could have been stopped or something that the...
Somebody was at fault.
Somebody was at fault. And, yes, somebody was at fault and somebody maybe did some, you know, really, I'm not saying they acted willfully, but maybe they could have done something to avoid the accident. For example, you may be eligible for punitive damages, right? And while it's not a specific formula in law, what we know is that punitive damages are generally based on the actual damages, a multiplier of the actual damages. So your punitive damages as a multiplier under the new law would be, let's say it's four times 20,000, because that other 80,000 under the $100,000 amount is not recoverable. Under the old law, your punitive damages could have been $400,000. And so while up front you may get your costs paid, if the jury finds that there was really some egregious behavior or some action on the part of the defendant that defendant deserves punitive damages, the victim, the plaintiff, is going to be entitled to a significantly lower amount. So I think that's really at the basis of the problem with this change in legislation. Let's make sure people are treated fairly, and when we, in essence, end up hiding the cost or not allowing the plaintiff, the victim, to recover his or her entire cost as the cost of what the injuries that were incurred cost to repair, then it has further ripples down the road.
Okay,
does that make sense?
So let me give you an example the way I understand it. So I'm driving down Holmes Road, and some careless driver blows through a stoplight at 99th Street, T-bones me on the driver's side. Okay, I am traumatized by the accident. I have a very difficult time driving again because of the post-stress from the accident. I suffer $100,000 worth of damages. The health insurance company pays $80,000 of that. Under existing law, I walk in and say, look, this person ran this light at 99th and Holmes and T-boned me on my driver's side. It cost me $100,000, and now I have a hard time driving again, and I drive for a living, and now that's at risk.
Ooh. Yeah, that's a...
So I'm saying that I should be entitled to punitive damages that person's at fault of $400,000.
Well, and again...
Or three times the amount, $300,000.
Three times or four times, whatever the amount is, but it's usually based on what you're able to recover initially. So the defendant would end up paying, because your insurance company paid that you've been paying benefits to for year after year after year, your insurance company then went ahead and paid $80,000 of those $100,000 in damages. You're responsible for the additional $20,000, for example. If you're responsible for the $20,000, that's the amount that you can recover from the defendant. If that's what you recover, then based off of your recovery amount is usually how pain and suffering is figured. Now, I don't, you know, you even complicate it further in my mind when you talk about this is how you make, you know, this is how you earn your living. I think that adds a whole new dimension. I haven't even gone there yet. It's, right. But again, what we're talking about is where you start impacts where you end up. And again, let's just be clear. You know, the victim has gone to trial, and the jury has found the defendant at fault. So this is not something where we necessarily need to have sympathy or compassion for the defendant. This is the victim who was traumatized and victimized, and this is the victim who we're talking about trying to make whole.
Okay, I understand this first page, and I do not believe that it is fair.
Okay, so should we just have everyone vote no?
Well, that would, I mean, the, it seems to me that if we're here to protect the constituents that we represent,
right,
those who are not at fault of causing the accident, then
right,
this change is not good for them.
Right, I agree with you. So, all right, we've gone through that part, and again, I may have jumped ahead a little bit.
I'm going to go into subsection 3 here.
Yes.
If, and we have brackets again, so we're deleting out, a defendant introduces evidence.
Okay, so let's talk about that. Just if I may briefly. So
right,
earlier, the part that we bracketed out said, you know, it's okay if the defendant introduces evidence that insurance helped pay for part of this. But now we've taken that out and instead said all you can do is...
So the jury has no idea what the total amount of medical costs are?
Well...
Because it seems like if the defendant is unable to introduce evidence... And you're sitting on a jury, and you hear this case, and you say, yes, this person who blew that stoplight is at fault, then if I'm not able to say how much my medical bills were, and I can only tell them what's left over, what if I have really good insurance, and it pays, you know, or I've met my deductible and my family deductible, and it's paying 90-10, and all I have is $10,000? What if I'm already past the... In our insurance, there's a threshold where if your whole family goes over the deductible amount, then
right,
it's 100% coverage.
Right.
So what if I'm at that point, and then I have this accident, my medical bills are 100% covered, and there is zero left to pay? How is that represented then in the case, and how can they know what the punitive damages should be based on if my insurance picked up 100% of the bill?
Well, I think that's a really great question because we took out the section that says that the defendant can introduce evidence that says, look, this guy has some insurance and he's going to he's going to have part of this paid. I don't know, and I think when the senator from the first, when you inquire of him later, I think we can go back and ask, does by taking that out of law mean we cannot introduce that evidence or not? I don't know, but
why are we limiting a citizen from introducing evidence in a case at all?
Well, so
like it's up to the jury to decide whether they find that evidence credible or not, and it's up to the jury to decide whether they want to use that information. Why are we saying that they can't submit it?
Well, what we're saying, instead of allowing the defendant to introduce the evidence, or at least pulling that out and saying, instead we're looking at it from, we're saying the victim, the plaintiff, can only recover what hasn't been paid for by outside sources, including insurance. So it's really quite a significant change from current law. I don't know whether or not evidence can be introduced. I don't, but it does... So we'll find that out from our friend who has a law degree when we ask him. But what it does say is that you as a victim are only going to recover what hasn't been paid for.
Senator, we're only on page 1, and so far I don't see this as being a good deal for our people at all.
Well, I'm concerned about it too. So let's go ahead. Why don't you continue reading?
All right, so after we delete out that they can't introduce evidence anymore, which I think is preposterous, then we say such payments described in subsection 2 of this section, then we begin our brackets again. Or such payments would be new language. So again, that goes back to you can show them what you still have left over, correct? Unless the insurance picked up 100% of it.
Such payments, which are the payments that are, let's see. Well, let's read on. Such
okay.
payments, why don't
so,
you...
So now we're deleting out such... let's see here. Such introduction shall constitute a waiver of any right to a credit against a judgment pursuant to. So we're deleting that out.
Right.
I want to understand that better. Such introduction shall constitute a waiver of any right to a credit against a judgment pursuant to. They're taking that out, and then they're adding in, are included in a plaintiff's claim for special damages at trial, the defendant who made the payment or on whose behalf the payment was made shall be entitled to deduct and receive a credit for such payments from any judgment as provided for in section 490.710.
So I guess this is, if I'm understanding this correctly, it says that the payments that are included in the victim's claim for special damages at trial, the defendant who made the payment or on whose behalf the payment was made shall be in, so the defendant shall be entitled to deduct and receive a credit for from the judgment for the payments that were made from any judgment, regardless of whether those payments were made by an insurance company or some outside source. So even if my dad came in and said, oh my gosh, I want to pay your hospital bill because you've been harmed, those payments that get made get deducted from what the defendant owes, is how I'm reading that. What do you think about that?
I need to come back to this one to better understand it. Let's keep going here. Subsection 4, this section does not require the exclusion of evidence admissible for other proper purpose. So they're basically saying that you can still submit evidence in the case, you just can't tell them how much the damage was.
Well, I'm not sure that you can't. So again, that I think this is dealing with the recovery of damages, less than it's dealing with what you're able to tell or not to tell. So about what happened. So let's go ahead.
Subsection 5, or section 5, subsection 1, and this is new language, except as provided in subsection 2 of this section, parties may introduce evidence of the, and then value is bracketed out, actual cost of the medical cares new or care or treatment rendered, bracketed out, to a party that was, and then inserted, to a plaintiff and or patient whose care is at issue, actual cost of the medical care or treatment shall be reasonable, which is not new language, necessary, and a proximate result of the negligence in the new language or fault of any party.
Okay, so this is another really critical section. So when we take out the word value and insert actual cost, so you've gotten doctor bills that say, well, the cost of this treatment is $1,200, right? Mm-hmm. Insurance is kicking in and it's paying $800. Your cost, $100. So the $800 and the $100 doesn't add up to the $1,200, right? Because the insurance company, in their negotiation on your behalf and on behalf of all their customers with the provider, has said, look, that may be worth $1,200. It may cost $1,200, but as an insurance company, we're bringing you all these patients. We are going to negotiate a lower rate at which we will pay you back of $800, and then we're not going to actually of $900. So, and we're going to pay $800 of it, and based on the contract we have, the policy we have with our insured person, they're going to owe $100. So hospital or provider, you may say the cost is $1,200, and it may be. If you're a person that comes in without insurance, you're going to get a $1,200 bill. But because you have an insurance policy with XYZ Insurance Company, XYZ Insurance Company has negotiated a deal on your behalf. They're going to pay $800. You're going to pay $100. So the actual cost was $900. The value was $1,200. The question is, which one of the, currently under law, we're allowed to put forward the $1,200, the value of the service. But for the fact that you've been paying premiums, and this is what I think the senator from the 5th was getting at with her amendment, but for the fact that you've been paying premiums to XYZ insurance company over these years, you would have had to pay the $1,200. But because of the amount that you've put into XYZ and because of their ability to negotiate with the provider, you've gotten this reduced rate. It doesn't mean the value of the services that were provided to you were any less than the $1,200. I think I'm explaining that correctly. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, it does. I'm going to probably need to go over this one more time with the senator from the 1st. And I also want to go over it with the senator from Barton, too.
Of course.
Because this is his legislation. So I want to ask him point blank why it's in the interest of the citizens from the Barton County that we do this. Like, I'm not understanding the drive and reason for this language. I mean, I could understand why it would benefit the person who's at fault, but they're the ones who caused the accident.
Now, when you do go over it with the senator from Barton, I'm not sure what the addition of the words in line 11, care or, I have question marks on my sheet by it, because I'm not sure what hadn't been covered under treatment, so I'll be anxious just to hear what that means. I don't know that how it impacts my view of the legislation. But again, when we go from the value to the actual cost, I think what we're doing is reducing the amount of money or the ability that the victim or the plaintiff is able to recover.
Okay.
Okay.
So now we're on section 5, subsection 2, bracketing out in determining the value of the, and then new language, for purposes of this subsection, the phrase actual cost of the, and then medical was old language, care or treatment, and then bracketed out, rendered, there shall be a rebuttable presumption that the dollar amount necessary to satisfy the financial obligation to the, and then that's where it brackets in, new language, shall be defined as a sum of money not to exceed the dollar amount paid plus any remaining dollar amount necessary to satisfy the financial obligation for medical care or treatment by, old language, a healthcare provider, bracketing out, represents the value of the medical treatment rendered. And so that represents the value. I could see why they would want that out, because if you're representing the complete value, then that's that $100,000.
Right. And that's not the... Right. And the new language in there that you read just goes to reinforce the idea of the actual cost versus the value or the cost that the that the provider would have charged you had you not been paying for and been on an insurance plan. And again, when it talks about the amount necessary to satisfy the financial obligation, so in other words, with my XYZ insurance company at my side, the financial obligation for me was only going to be $900 on a $1,200 value, $800 of it paid by my insurance, and $100 paid by me. So the sum of money not to exceed the actual dollars paid plus any remaining dollar amount to satisfy the financial obligation, I think would be $900 versus the $1,200 cost.
Okay, let me finish that little subsection there. Upon motion of a party, the court may determine outside the hearing of the jury the value of the medical treatment rendered based upon additional evidence, including but not limited to A, now this is all the deleted part, and by the way, this underlying bill is pretty good. Whoever originally wrote this underlying bill did a pretty nice job of balancing out the fairness in this entire equation.
Right.
A, the medical bills incurred by a party. B, the amount actually paid for medical treatment rendered to a party.
Right. Originally, that was all part of the evidence. Right.
And then C, the amount or estimate of the amount of medical bills not paid, which such party is obligated to pay to any entity in the event of a recovery. Notwithstanding the foregoing, no evidence of collateral sources shall be made known to the jury in presenting the evidence of the value of the medical treatment rendered. And that's where the in bracket ends, to delete that out. New language, after adjustment for any contractual discounts, price reductions, or write-off by any person or entity. And then we got one more section, subsection 3. Evidence of necessary future medical care or treatment to be rendered shall be limited to the amount necessary to satisfy the actual cost of the medical care or treatment. shall be limited to the amount necessary to satisfy the actual cost of the medical care or treatment. I'm not understanding. Why is this good for our citizens? Why is this good for victims of accidents? Anytime you read a piece of legislation, put yourself in the center of this equation. What if it were you? What if you were the victim and someone who is at fault fundamentally altered your livelihood, your psyche, and now you have a court and a jury that is going to try to make things right. And this language is counterintuitive and counterproductive to the fairness to that victim.
I absolutely agree with you, and
I had no idea. Now I do.
Okay.
Senator, thank you so much for walking me through this. Mr. President?
Senator from the 7th.
I'd like to inquire the Senator from Barton.
Senator from Barton, do you yield?
I yield.
Proceed.
Senator, I must be missing something. Please explain to me why we are trying to tip the scales in favor of the person at fault instead of the victim who has suffered a horrendous accident.
Well, that's a total mischaracterization, but I can tell you what the bill does, if that's what you're asking me, Senator.
Well, I want to know why it does it. I want you to explain the motivation.
Absolutely.
For what changes are.
In 2005, I believe you were in the House.
Not yet. I got elected in 06 and began my service in 07.
The legislature approved a fairly significant tort reform bill that addressed this part of damages. Medical damages is one of nine different levels of recovery that are available to an attorney. If you were injured,
available to the victim.
Right. If you were injured, you would be able to go for pain and suffering. You'd be able to go for lost wages. You'd be able to go for future compensation. You'd be able to ask for earning capacity. You'd be able to ask for household services. You'd be able to ask for mental anguish. You'd be able to ask for disability and disfigurement. You'd be able to ask for future medical expenses. All of those are unaffected by this legislation. But there was also the intention of awarding you as well the cost of your medical expenses. So in 2005, when that legislation was passed, it clarified that medical expenses meant cost to you, if I'm the injured party, of my medical, whatever my medical costs were, and that should be recoverable. We should get to recover. Courts decided that value didn't mean what we had intended it to mean, that it actually meant what somebody said it could have cost instead of what it did cost. And so I distributed, I don't know if you have it in your file or not, I distributed a benefits explanation sheet that kind of helps to illustrate this. I know mine's here somewhere. I had to hand it to you.
I've got one. Thank you.
And that's basically, this is the simplest way to look at it, is over here on the, you've gotten these just like all the rest of us
sure.
have. Over here on the left is
which
the
we work together to pass transparency out of here, which is going to make these a lot better.
Okay, great. That's good. Billed amount over there on the left, contractual adjustment, and then the approved amount. And so essentially what the 2005 said is the approved amount, which is what's paid, is what you get reimbursed. Now, there was a misunderstanding between you and the senator from the 24th in that if in fact you only paid $1,000 but your insurance company paid $9, you would get the $10. The insurance company loses that $9 because you paid for that. You paid premiums. And so you own that recovery. And so if in fact you only pay $1,000, you still get $10 because that was the cost of your medical. Now, you don't get $20.
More along the lines of deductible, right? Not the premiums. You would take the deductible out of that amount, correct?
No.
You would get the credit of your premiums towards...
No, your premiums are not even touched with it. Your premiums are not dealt with. If in this case, let's just use this. In this case, let's just use this first line. $50.62 was billed.
Okay.
$24 was the adjustment, so $26.58 was paid. It doesn't have. Let's just say that the insurance plan. Oh, it does. The plan paid $26.58. You paid nothing. Okay, under Senate Bill 847, you would get $26.58, but you wouldn't get $50.62.
But why can't we tell the jury that the amount that it, the care cost was $50.62.
Acquiring, it didn't cost that. It cost $26.58.
Yeah, but that's a product of the absurdity that is the health care insurance or relation.
That's the cost.
Yeah, but it's the cost on this particular one. What if, okay.
That's the argument, Senator. That is the argument. The court said that value was the 50-62.
Right.
What this legislation says is, no, that's not what was intended in 2005. That's not what we intend now. What we intend with this is simply to recover the cost of your medical plus the cost to the insurance company of your medical. But you still can go. You still can go after pain and suffering. You can go after lost wages, etc.
But there's no guarantee. There's nothing. Help me understand. Nothing guarantees that because the jury gets this sheet in totality, that they're going to award me punitive damages based on the 50-62. Nothing assures that, right?
This doesn't deal with punitive damages.
No, I know, but the point is, the way I understood from my inquiry to the Senator from the 24th, is that oftentimes the punitive amounts are three times what the medical expenses end up being in an accident. So if I'm a juror and I get to see all of this,
right,
that I may say to myself, well, here's the damage, here's what hurt, here's what, you know, the cost of that care was, and I'm going to
cost. When you say cost of that care, what do you mean?
Well, I mean what it was.
How was
what
that?
Was
who did,
billed
who
okay
was, who did that who had to pay that?
All right, what if, go back to my example of in our insurance plan, if you, like, in my deductible, $600 is an individual deductible. The first $600 I spend comes out of my pocket.
Right.
For me, for my daughter, for my son, doesn't matter. When we hit $2,400 as a family, and it may be $1,290.10 and then $2,400 at 100%.
That's right.
But at some point in time,
process,
let's say $2,400, I go to 100%. Let's say that I've hit that. I get into an accident. My medical insurance or my medical bills, the billed amount is X, and what I ended up paying was 100% of it because I don't have any out of pocket at all.
Right.
What happens then with your bill if your bill goes into effect?
You recover the cost of that medical care that your insurance company paid.
I recover the cost of it.
Right. And your insurance company, by law, cannot come after you for it.
What about the jury? Why are you opposed to the jury seeing the entire amount?
Because this is that's the definition of this element. You've got nine elements at least that go into this judicial award. You've got nine. This is one of nine, and this one is only confined to medical expenses. All the others have the opportunity for punitive in them. The other eight, you can go after punitive damages for pain and suffering. You can go after punitive for lost wages. You can go after punitive for all of that. But this is strictly mathematics. This is saying,
right,
look, in addition to all those things, you also get to recover the cost of your medical.
Well, how do you know, though?
Otherwise,
what
you've got to take the cost out of all those other things.
How do you know? Because I'm looking at this 50-62, the contractual adjustment's 2404. Explain to me how that happened. What causes a contractual adjustment? And why is it 2404?
I don't know.
I don't either.
But that's what was paid.
But, well, no, what was the amount approved was 2658.
Right. Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, the 24 was the adjustment.
So we don't know why the contractual adjustment. That doesn't mean that 5062 wasn't the true cost of the service that was provided.
Define cost.
Well, it was the value. Well, and that's why I think that when they wrote this law initially, they put value in there because they knew that the healthcare system is so convoluted and there are so many webs.
They put value in there to mean cost, but the court decided.
But that gets us to why
court decision. This is a judicial decision, Senator. Let me ask you a quick question.
Yeah.
It's your inquiry.
Okay.
But if somebody asks you what the cost of your car was, would you give them the sticker price, or would you tell them what you paid for it? If they said, what did your car cost you?
Right, the value of my car would be the sticker price.
And get the sticker price?
Well, and that's what, let's go, you know, like if you're going to sue sell that car.
What you get for it.
So I paid X amount. The sticker was X amount. I drive it for a year, and I decide that I'm going to put it on the market.
Right.
And I go to Kelley Blue Book, and I say, all right, how much is my car worth? At that point, they're going to give me a whole bunch of inputs for me to decide, does it have good interior? Is it dented on the outside?
And that's what your insurance company
what's the mileage on it, all that?
Totally.
So the value of that car truly is not what KBB will say what it is, because that's going to vary. I mean, they're going to say, is it in good condition? Is it excellent condition?
Right.
But in this instance, and reason why that analogy doesn't mesh with what we're trying to do here is because that victim who went through those medical treatments, right, whatever the value of that service provided to them was mutually exclusive of what Kelley Blue Book is going to say it is, or your insurance company is going to say
it's
it is.
Not, because this legislation says it's the same thing.
Then why would the hospitals or the doctors tell you the 5062? Do you think they came up with that just willy-nilly?
I don't have a clue, Senator.
But they came up with it, though.
The intention here is that if you're the patient, if you're the harmed, the intention is that you recover all of your medical expenses plus what your insurance company paid for your medical expenses.
But the way I read the underlying bill, it doesn't necessarily suggest that you're going to be able to recover the totality of your medical expenses, the value of your medical expenses.
That's just going to let the jury know what they are. Right, that's what the court messed
and you're,
up,
and
so
you're,
we're fixing it.
But see, I don't think we are fixing it.
If you want to argue whether that's the right thing to do, that's a different argument. This bill simply says the cost of medical is the cost of medical.
So let's argue whether that's
it's
the right thing to do or not.
It's arbitrary value that nobody ever,
so
there was never any funds transfer.
Let's discuss whether that is the right thing to do or not.
Right.
Is it the right thing to do to tell a citizen who's been injured in an accident that they cannot present evidence to a jury? Is that the right thing to do?
Which one of these are you talking? Which one of the nine different
I'm talking
elements
about,
are you talking about?
No. Just in this legislation right here, when you bracket out, right at the first of it, if a defendant introduces evidence, so you're deleting the ability to introduce this entire sheet. You just want them to only be able to introduce a portion of this sheet.
I want them to introduce what they paid for medical expenses.
But that's such a variable.
That's not a variable.
Yes,
it's math.
It is.
No. It's pure math,
but,
Senator.
But, no.
I know
okay.
exactly.
The fact that they paid is not a variable, but what they
what,
paid is a variable.
What did they pay here for medical?
But how they arrived at, you
how
already
is
told
that,
me.
How is
you already
variable?
Told me that you can't determine why that contractual adjustment of 2404
they're
exists.
They're paying the contractual adjustment.
I know they're
paying
not.
The final
I know they're
cost.
Not. But there's no reason why a jury shouldn't see that.
Why should they see it?
Because it's a part of what the doctors said, what the value of that service was.
We're not trying to recover what the doctors said. We're trying to recover what was paid.
But the jury is not going to decide
the cost,
in the end how
the
much.
The cost of medical. Is what this is confined to the cost
okay.
of medical. Now, if you don't want it confined, that's your privilege.
But the cost.
But that's what this does.
But
it says
you can't tell me.
Recovering the cost of medical is recovering the cost of medical.
Okay, but you can't tell me that cost is a fair number.
It's what I wrote the check for, Senator.
But it's going to change. I may have an accident and have different insurance than you do, and the same exact thing. I may pay $1,000. You may pay $25,000.
You'll get $1,000, and I'll get $25,000.
And that's not fair. It's the same thing.
It's making me whole, Senator.
No, this is why this legislation is not good for our constituents.
Making me whole.
Do you think this legislation is, if your constituents understood that they were in an accident and you were going to pass this language, you think that they would think that that's good for them?
Absolutely.
Well, then I guess we represent different flocks, Senator, because my constituents would definitely say that presenting the entire picture of what happened in the accident with all of the different facets would be a better circumstance for them than limiting it to just the amount that you wrote the check for.
So we should, what we really should do, and this would satisfy your concerns, is we should pass a bill that says you cannot offer a billed amount that's different than what's paid. You cannot display that on the bill, and that would solve it.
Well, I
but
think
it changes
that,
nothing.
I think that as long as the jury gets to see the information, then they're going to make determinations.
Then we just remove that information. We make a law that says you cannot report that number. If that's not a real number, then all you can report is what you pay.
Well, that's a deeper rabbit hole.
That's just how meaningful this debate is.
That assumes
you're arguing that that cost of medical is not cost of medical. I'm arguing that cost of medical is cost of medical.
Well, because there's like 10 other or 3 other variables that go into what you actually pay that you're not taking into consideration.
Number.
I know. Well, it's meaningless in so much as our system is not constructed in a way that value is reflected before you actually do the service, which again is why we worked on transparency together. However, you are suggesting that whoever came up with these billed amounts,
right,
whoever did that, that they're wrong, that they shouldn't be looked at.
I'm suggesting that whoever came up with the cost was right.
No, because the cost has other factors
that doesn't
bear on what actually took place in that either operation room.
Actually, this,
no,
Senator, this column never took place. This column absolutely took place. I don't see where you're getting that argument.
Because the column that actually took place is based on a formula and a contract that is between the insurer and the doctor.
Good point.
But you're saying that the jury should know what the doctor said that amount should be.
Because it has nothing to do with the cost of medical.
If it's not going to make, and at the end of the day, when that jury sees that number, you're assuming that they're not capable of discerning that number is a billed amount and not a cost amount.
I'm
saying that they can make that determination.
It has no material.
And it doesn't guarantee that's going to be the material amount.
It has no material.
But you're assuring that it won't be
by
preventing those numbers from being seen.
Because they're play numbers.
But, see, that's an insult to the doctors and the hospitals who came up with those numbers.
Well, fine. If they take that as an insult, they take it as an insult. They haven't called me.
I think the point is that those numbers are there because they reflect what that amount would be if the insurance company didn't have a contractual relationship that negotiated it down.
No, that's not true, Senator, because I could
then
call.
Where'd they come from?
If I didn't have insurance and I got billed this amount, it would take a phone call to immediately get at least a 10% discount on every one of those.
I know
that,
not
Senator, because
defending.
I was without insurance for several years. I could call up a hospital. I could call up a provider. I could say, look, I don't have insurance. And just by calling, they would immediately cut it 10%. Now, then I could negotiate further and frequently get it down below that. But there would be an immediate 10% discount just because I called and said I don't have insurance. That number meant nothing then either, Senator.
Well, I am not defending the billed amount, all right?
Well, so, it sounds like
no. What I'm
right
saying
number.
Is, I'm defending.
That's a play number.
I'm defending the right for a jury to see it.
There's no value to that number. Give them another number.
Well,
make up a number and give it to them. What the attorneys are doing in every one of these other eight. They're making up a number, and they have the opportunity to do that, and they have the right to do that. To say, well, this is what we think pain and suffering is worth. Where does that number come from?
Okay, so all right. So answer this question, and then I'll move on to some of my other colleagues. If I don't have any out-of-expenses cost for my medical care.
Right.
So for me, the number's always zero because
for your,
I'm at
100%. For your true out-of-pocket. Right.
Yeah, my true out-of-pocket.
Right. You already reached your limit.
And I am in this scenario.
Right.
How much do I get to tell the jury that my medical expenses were?
Whatever's in that right column. Whatever was paid for medical costs. Those are the medical costs. There's nothing there about who
paid. But I didn't pay
it.
Anything.
Pardon?
I didn't pay anything.
No, but that's what was paid.
So you're saying that the answer is zero.
No, this is what was paid for medical.
So I get to tell them how much the insurance company paid.
Right.
So it's not the delta.
You get to recover that.
So it's... Yeah, I know. 1, 2, 3. I think there's 4 of us in here. So, because this is riveting debate, they're missing it. So if... So if I get to show them, so what I'm understanding from my debate with the senator from the 24th is that it's the delta difference between.
Hold on.
So let me be perfectly clear because I'm gonna fact check you with the senator from the first.
Sure.
So if my cost, the billed amount is $100,000, and the insurance company pays $80,000 of that.
Right. Your insurance company.
My insurance company.
Right.
When
now,
I
there
introduce.
There are two parts of this, and I'll go into that after you finish.
When
this.
I introduce. To the jury, the evidence of my damages, okay? I'm made to understand that the bill says I can only show the $20,000, not the $80,000 the insurance company paid.
No, you show the insurance payment as well.
I can show the
$80,000. The cost of medical, the cost.
Rather, I paid it or rather the insurance company
right.
paid it.
Right, that was
see,
the
that
cost
is not
medical.
The way that we have been made to understand certain provisions of this of this legislation.
Senator from the first can explain that to you as well, but there are two there are two parts of the bill. There are two different insurance circumstances. One is the one you and I are talking about, where you own, you have insurance, I have insurance. That's what this reflects. There is also the way that there's when someone's self-insured, like the railroads, for example. In fact, this is one of the issues that they've had. Now, in that situation, if you're a railroad employee and you get injured and you pay $10,000 and the railroad pays $100,000 and you recover $110,000, then the railroad can come after you and say, well, look, 100 of that was mine, and so you have to give it back because they become the defendant.
The current law, or is that under this new language?
Under this new language. They become the defendant. Now, in your situation, the defendant is another company. It's somebody else, and okay. The insurance company is yours. But when the insurance company is the defendant, which is what it is, for example, with a railroad,
okay.
then the law is different, and both of them are in this bill. But what I'm describing to you is accurate for your insurance because you own the insurance. It changes when you go to the other scenario where the insurance company is the defendant, which is the case in the railroads.
All right, so
there may be some others, but that's
so
the big
one. I have private insurance and my medical bills, I'm charged $100,000. And my insurer pays $80,000 right. of that. And I have $20,000 left that I got to pay for because let's say that I'm not 100% yet, and I'll never get to 100%. They're only going to pay 80%, so they pay $80,000. When I walk into that jury and I hand them the evidence under this new language, am I allowed to show them the $80,000 that the insurance company paid for the medical care that I received?
The cost of medical that you would give that jury is $100,000.
$100,000. So they would see that.
That was the cost of your medical.
That is not what we had previously talked about. So I need to figure out the language.
I've been working very hard to straighten that out. I tried to straighten it out when they first brought it up. I've straightened it out. I've talked to the senator from the first.
So that's one scenario by which I have private insurance that pays on my behalf.
Right.
And I get to include that in the receipt or into the evidence to them. Now, you're saying the second part of this is that the company acts as the insurer?
Let's take the railroad. The railroad ensures that they are the insurer for their employees.
Okay.
So if you are suing for damages, you're actually suing your employer.
Okay.
And in that case, they can come after you to recover the portion of what you recovered that belongs to them.
Okay. So let's say I'm working for the railroad, and by no fault of anybody's, one of the cars becomes unconnected.
Whatever.
And runs over my foot.
Right.
And I've lost
$100,000 in medical.
I've lost my leg.
Right.
Or I've lost my ankle down. And now I'm in the hospital. They come in. They say, look, well, under the new transparency bill that we passed, we'll know in advance of the operation how much it's going to cost. But now they're going to tell me weeks later. And they say, all right, that cost, that operation, and you're 2 week stay cost $100,000. At that point in time, the $100,000 is going to be paid for by the railroad because they are my insurance company.
Right.
Okay.
Okay. Well,
correct.
I'm following you.
So then I go to a court case to say who's at fault for this. Let's say that they found out that the car came unhooked because it was a personnel error. Someone didn't latch something that they should have, and it came unhooked. So I say, look, this isn't my fault. That's the company's fault. And I sue them for what would be the nine things that you listed there, right?
Plus your cost of your medical.
One of them would be cost of medical.
Right.
But they already paid the cost of my medical. And they paid, $100,000 for it. So when I sue them, I'm suing my employer.
Basically, right.
For being at fault for my accident, and then your legislation, current law says what? That I can? How is current law handled under that situation where I'm the company's at fault? I am in the midst of this lawsuit to recover medical damages that they paid. So I don't understand why I would be. They paid the medical damages.
Well,
why am I recovering them?
The current law is essentially the same, except that now with this judicial ruling, you can introduce money above what was really paid. So that they already current law they can come after. They don't have to pay. Let me back up. Current law already lets the railroads recover whatever they paid for your medical. All this does is say that that's all that you can recover is what they paid for your medical as medical expenses. You can't recover some other fictitious number above what they paid.
Okay.
So that's all we really did was we took that. We're saying this number doesn't mean anything. You're still over here, but you don't get to if you paid $10,000 and they paid $90 instead of them paying it all, then you'd get your $10. But they could come back and recover their $90. You could turn in the $100, but they could come after you.
Do they recover it from me? Because I mean,
I'm not sure exactly how the paperwork flows, but
right.
In terms of how the money ends up. You get back whatever you paid for medical. They get back whatever they paid for medical.
Why would they get it?
They don't pay it.
Why would they get it back?
Well, that's what I mean. They don't have to pay you for what you didn't pay.
And just the amount over.
Right, just over, what you paid. That's the case like you thought the other was. But the other one, you get the insurance.
But see, that to me, that seems a little bit more reasonable than the first understanding of an individual citizen where the insurer is not the company. Because the company, acting as the insurer, they're going to pay what your medical costs are. Now, are we still saying that the jury, let's say that they paid $90 and the docs billed $100, so there's $10,000 difference, are we still saying that the jury isn't, or we're not going to be able to submit evidence showing all $100,000? Because again, that's the way I see this. Because I'm not so hung up, I'm not wrapped around the axle
right.
about the end result as I am about the fairness of presenting evidence that shows all facets of the equation.
Yeah, and I'm not a courtroom attorney. I don't know exactly.
I'll tell you what, I appreciate you. I'm not questioning why you have this legislation in front of us. I believe that you believe that it's an issue of fairness in your eyes.
Well, I think it's an issue of definition. I mean, the point is the intention here was to recover medical costs. What the court did was they redefined medical cost to something that is a number that doesn't relate to anything because nobody pays that number. And all this is legislation to say, no, Supreme Court, that wasn't what we intended. We really did mean what we said. We meant that one of these elements that is recoverable by the injured party is the cost of their medical. Now, they can
Why
go
can't
after
we do
these
both?
Other things.
Why can't we do both? Why can't we say that actual cost means what is paid and then allow the value?
Well, this is where all those other things come in. All those other eight items is where the rest of that comes in. There is no limit here to punitive damages. I mean, the point is this is not a punitive damage issue. There was never the intention for this to be a punitive issue. It was a cost recovery issue. We've got all these other items that are on the attorney's scratch pad that he can negotiate with his client and with whoever the defendant is. That's where all the punitive comes in. But it was never intended for it to be coming in at the medical cost. That's just a math.
But we agree, though.
Accounting.
We agree, though, that the jury has the ultimate say,
right,
in
right.
determining that. Right.
The top of that. I mean, wherever that settlement reaches, it's going to be A plus B plus C plus D. But one of those items is going to be cost of medical.
So, okay. In it, ultimately, if a jury is educated into the understanding of where you're at, then they're going to weigh that actual cost in a manner that's going to do that.
Why? They're not going to weigh it. They're just going to add it into the award.
But why not at least let them see?
Because that's whichever side you're on, that's considered a non-negotiable item. That's an accounting issue. If I'm the plaintiff, let's say I'm the defendant. If I'm the defendant, then I know exactly what that cost is going to be. That's going to be whatever's billed by the hospital and the doctors and so on. If I'm the plaintiff, I know exactly what that number is going to be. It's going to be those same additions of numbers. Now, I don't know where all these others will end up because that's what you're arguing about. That's where you're trying to put values in terms of punitive or whatever. But I do know what the cost of medical is. I don't have to make that a debatable issue.
Okay. Well, what about the senator from the Fifth Amendment? Where are we at on that? What exactly does it do in your eyes, and are you supportive of it, or are you opposing
it? Well, no, I'm not. And a couple of reasons. I mean, there are several reasons. First of all, I think the senator from the first just also made the point that when you did as well, you might not have realized it, but you made the same point. You said, look, I've already paid my $600, my $2,400 for all my kids, and I've recovered, and I'm recovering money beyond that now. Well, that's all part of those of that premium that you're paying. That's value on your premium. If I had a lawsuit right now, my insurance company, because of my medical issues over the interim, would be way behind. I mean, there's no way that I have any premiums left to recover. I've far away recovered all my premiums.
Right.
But so that those are kind of a they kind of disappear. Now, if we brought those in, another concern I have, Senator, I mean, first of all, I don't think that's appropriate, and that's one of the things, that's one of the reasons we're saying if your insurance pays your medical bills, then you get that money because you paid for that. That was your premium that said, I'm paying a premium for this coverage. And so the medical contract that you have is that the insurer says, if you have these medical costs, then I owe you this much money. So that, to me, neutralizes that. But if in fact, you pass something like the senator from the Fifth, you've introduced a whole new level of complexity into the courtroom, because now there's going to be argument about, well, how much, what medical expenses have you had already? How much of those premiums have already been essentially redeemed by those medical expenses? And all of a sudden, you've got this whole other massive legal issue to contest how much premium actually went for the coverage that you just redeemed. And I think that just, to me, that's totally unnecessary.
Okay, last question, and I'm going to move on to the Senator from First. Under existing law, as it is right now, what is the damage to the victim that you're trying